You are listening to KGVM 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio and streaming at kgvm.org. Well, hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and I'm your host, Roxana. I have a couple more Desert Oracle Radio episodes for you today. First up, it was May 2020, and we were just emerging from the quarantine. Now, I'm not a frequenter of the culture of such places as the title of this one, but maybe you are. Here from May 1st, 2020, is Ken Lane's episode titled, Back to the Bar Rooms.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
I like to get two drinks because then you don't have to bother the server or the bartender for a while. You got two drinks. You got a whiskey, you got a beer. So there they go.
Yeah. When was the last time you went to a bar? Do you remember the last bar you went to?
I do. Before the shutdown, my last time out was at my neighborhood Mexican restaurant here in Yucca Valley, and I went over there and had my usual carne asada plate and a couple of Patron margaritas, yeah. Not knowing that was going to be it, but you always figure, I'll get one more in.
Yeah.
And that was the invisible friend surprise there, that you actually were not going to get one more in.
Not yet, at least. Not for a while, yeah.
Not for a little while. You know how we like to have Jason P. Woodbury come on the show and talk about interesting desert musicians and their stories, and that was our plan for tonight, but I texted Jason this afternoon. I said, man, all I can think about is I want to go to a bar. Like eating at the bar in a steakhouse and then going to another bar to hang out with people and then going to another bar to see a band.
Yeah.
And then getting a nightcap. Yeah, some bar time. And you can drink at home, but it doesn't taste the same. It's got no social element. So, I'll try to do the same thing I do at home in a bar, and it's different. You go to a tavern by yourself, you bring a book you want to read, you get a drink, you order something to eat, you text some friends, and it's like, that's different than doing the same exact same thing in your home.
Yeah.
Because, you know, first of all, somebody who knows how to make a drink is going to make your drink. And if you're having a beer, it's going to be a nice draft beer, not something from the Circle K. And you might strike up a conversation or join one or, you know, just have a little rapport with the bartender on a quiet afternoon, leave everybody to their thoughts, watch people on the sidewalk, watch the cars on the highway. There's something very, to me, meditative about being in a bar by myself that is so very different from doing those same activities, even if you are, you know, blessed to have some outdoor space and can do it outside. It's not the same. It lacks, pizzazz. Jason, you all know from Aquarium Drunkard, and writes for Pitchfork and New Times. He's at Zia Records and Phoenix and Vegas and Tucson. Well, he's stuck at the house in Phoenix, too. So I figured we'd pour a couple of drinks and just kind of shoot the breeze, you know, rattle each other's chains for the old times' sake, for the good times. So, Jason, I got myself Kentucky bourbon on the rocks and a pint of beer. What you got?
I am drinking a session IPA. I was able to order some beer from a local brewery and stock up. They're doing deliveries, you know, right now.
Oh, no, so that's, I was able that's to get a little bit of a bar experience. Get to see the barman for a minute.
Yeah, we ordered. I didn't have any cold ones, which is why I'm not drinking one. But we ordered a case of Valley beer from our friends at Wren House, and we've also ordered from Arizona Wilderness, another brewery here. So it's really nice to be able to throw you know, like an order together and have them drop it off. I'll tell you, that's been one good thing of this shutdown, is that all of a sudden you can get alcohol delivered and take it out from your favorite places.
So being back in New Orleans, man, it just tells you too that there's so many stupid rules that so many stupid little bureaucrats made up just to make life more of a hassle for everybody else. And
that's right.
And with a snap of somebody's fingers, oh, we don't have to do that anymore. Like, really? What else don't we have to do anymore?
That's what it makes you think about, man. It makes you think about what limits have we put on ourselves, you know, needlessly.
Yeah, we're just, you know, even those of us out in the desert, the kind of independent-minded, stay out of my way, don't tread on me, etc. You just get in the habit. You get in the habit of somebody you don't even know, somebody you can't even talk to, somebody who's a robot voicemail in, you know, the city of San Bernardino or Phoenix City Hall or whatever. And you're running around with a headache trying to do something stupid because somebody somewhere decided you had to do it. I was talking to my oldest son the other day. This hit him in his first year of high school, you know. And he was saying something about this and that next year and what classes he wanted to do, drama. And he's, you know, oh, I can't because I have to do that. I said, look, man, nothing matters anymore. Don't, you know, don't sit here at home in your non-existent school and worry about something that existed 2 months ago that may never exist again. And he thought about it for a little while, and he's like, oh, actually, I don't need to take PE next year. I can do drama again. He was, you know, pissed off because he lost half the year in this class he liked.
Man.
And yeah. You just kind of get it in your head. All right, nothing matters. And I posted. Oh, go ahead.
Thinking about bars, I wonder if that's part of the I think that maybe that's part of the appeal, right, of a bar, is that it's a space. It's one of the few spaces that we have culturally agreed upon.
Yeah.
It's a place where...
It's a temporary autonomous zone, a TAZ.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you don't have to... There's not a lot of rules at a bar, especially a dive bar, you know? Tip your bartender. Don't be rude when you're ordering your drink.
Right.
And that's about it. There's not a lot of rules to follow, you know? That's why we love these places.
And there's one consequence if you just go over the top. You're 86th. You're out of there.
Dunzo.
It's simple. Just kind of be, you know, not too much of a jerk. Be nice to people and you'll have friends, especially if it's your neighborhood bar. And treat your bar staff and your bar back and everybody else the way you want to be treated. And it's your living room that's a lot more fun than your living room at home.
That's true. And you're right, man. There's something beautiful about reading a book at a bar, sitting in a booth and having somebody drop a drink off every now and then, reading or hanging out with a friend. I make it a point, the kind of work I do brings me into bars and venues all the time, or at least it did, and I like that, you know. I like sort of seeing everybody I know, but for me there's nothing better than calling up, you know, one friend and asking if they want to get a drink after work. To me, that's sort of like the ultimate bar experience, is you and one other person sitting there And hopefully you talk with the bartender too, and you talk with the people next to you, and Yeah, I grew up a churchgoer, you know, and it is still sort of a churchy experience a little bit. I know that's kind of cliche, but yeah, fellowship, that means something.
It's community, it's fellowship. Yeah. You know, we have a bar out here in Wonder Valley called The Palms, great place. And they serve up good and expensive food on Sunday mornings. And so people go in. This ain't like brunch in Scottsdale or San Diego or something. You know, this is the salt of the earth, generally covered in salt and sand, coming into the Palms. Food is good. Bloody Marys are $2. And people call it church. And they're not being cute. This is my congregation. I see them once a week. We wish each other well, and we all go home about 1 o'clock with our brains a little fried.
That's church. That's church for sure.
So I'll tell you some bars I like that I've been thinking about.
Tell me a few of them, yeah.
Well, you know, I lived in Los Angeles on and off. Never for too long at one time, but a couple of years here and there, enough to know and love many neighborhoods. And I love Musso and Frank. That's the kind of place, every time I've ever walked in there in my life, I just feel like I won, you know? I won the prize. I get to go in here in this beautiful old wood-paneled Hollywood bar with these people who have been working there for their whole lives. There's a news story in the LA Times every time another one of them retires, because they're all just about gone now, of the you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. Yeah, people who went in there working as kids, and that became the life. So you go in there, and it's just relaxation and comfort and a mix of retirees and bums and, you know, kind of people on the outskirts of the industry, musicians in town to play, and people with racing sheets. Just a beautiful place. The little glass jugs of martinis and the baskets of the French bread and butter. And the food's all right. You know, it's like, it's good. You're happy when you get it. But you're not going there to make a big deal out of food. To have the experience, to be around the people. You see people. People have their own nights, you know. My old buddy Coop, the artist, he used to go in there on a certain night. And years ago, he got a divorce, and so he and his ex had to decide who got their night. You know, that kind of thing.
So would Coop just sort of hold court? Would people know that that's where they could find him if they happened to be looking for him?
I mean, he's an artist. Not a lot of people would have known him if they were not introduced. As it turned out, I met him there. We knew each other online and happened to meet him there one night over drinks.
That guy defined the records I bought in the early 2000s for quite a while, yeah.
A figure of great and not quite as appreciated as he should be, importance in a number of cultural scenes. Now he's in Austin, you know.
I didn't realize that's where he had headed out. But, I mean, Austin's a good place for weird folks.
Yeah.
I've been told.
L.A. got a bit hard to have a normal life there. You know, we'll see how it is after all this. I mean, it's a very pleasant place to live. You can't blame the rich for wanting it too, but, you know, they kind of took all of it. I was thinking of, I used to live up on Alameda Island, San Francisco. It was a lucky 13 there. I think there's two. There's one in the city. And I'd go in there with my dog after I walked the dog around the island. Dog would be hot, stretch out on the cool wood floor, get a beer and a shot, and little food place next door, and they'd bring you food over, whatever they were making that day. There was, what else? I used to love to go into the 500 Club in the Mission District in San Francisco. This is back in the 90s. I worked nearby, going there. There was this little guy in a suit, you know, a very dapper gentleman who would come in at the same time every day, and he had a little Jack Russell Terrier. And he put the dog on a bar stool next to him, and the bartender would give the dog a little saucer of beer, you know, Anchor Steam out of the tap. The dog would lap it up, and then he'd give him a glass of water, and the dog would drink the water. You could tell looking at the dog, he could go for another beer. You don't want to overdo it. But I remember this time I was there, the dog was like 15 years old. Very sprightly Jack Russells are kind of insane little demons of high IQ within these cute little packages. Oh, where else? Delirium and The Mission. There was a place over in Los Feliz when I lived in L.A. called Ye Rustic Inn. That was very much everybody's living room in the neighborhood. They had food, diner food. You go in there and just start ordering, you know, grilled cheese and onion rings and pitchers, and people come in and out for hours. Your roommates, your neighbors, people you were in bands with. And it was, sadly, that place is no longer there. Tell me some of your favorites or ones that you've been missing.
Well, I've been missing, there's a place in downtown Phoenix that has only been open for a couple of years, but I really love it. It's called Gracie's.
That's a good name for a bar.
Yeah. Gracie's Tax Bar is what it's called because it was a tax, like an accountant filer's building before that. They stripped some of the facade off and it said, you know, tax on the building. So they called it the Tax Bar, which I don't 100% understand, but it doesn't matter because they've got really good tater tots and they've got beer and it's lit a little bit like a bar in a David Lynch movie. A lot of red light. So that's a big one. And
how's the air conditioning in there? Is one of those Phoenix downtown bars where they blast it and like you're going into a cave?
They do. It's dark and cold, which is the all-time great Phoenix combo. You know, I think that probably works anywhere, but here in Phoenix, the darker and the colder, the better. You know, you really feel like I miss Valley Bar, where we had a Desert Oracle a couple of years ago. We did a presentation there, and that's underground, so you get nice and chilly down there.
Yeah, I've been there two times with you. One, you invited me to do a Barflies like storytelling night.
Mm.
And then you promoted with Aquarium Drunkard Desert Oracle Radio live show there, and both times were the heat of summer. It was, you know, like opening the pyramid and going down to the tomb at the bottom and just getting in the coffin. It was very pleasant.
Yeah. You know, another bar I've been thinking a lot about was, I haven't been in a while, but I've got a framed photo of this bar hanging up above one of the chairs in my living room. That my wife Becky had got us when we first started dating. There's a bar in downtown Phoenix called the Bikini Lounge. And the Bikini Lounge has been, it depends on who you ask. Like if you ask the bartender on one night, they might tell you that it's the oldest continually operating tiki bar in the country. I don't know if there's any truth to that, Ken, so I can't really speak to it.
You don't want to wiki a bartender. Just let the bartender tell the story.
The bartender's in charge, you know, so I don't argue. I don't know if I've ever had a tiki drink at this place, but it is on Grand Avenue in Phoenix, which kind of runs... cuts a line through the city. You know, if you get on Grand Avenue and you just keep going, eventually I think it becomes the 60, and then you can take it to Vegas pretty much. But anyway, the Bikini Lounge was, for me, it was the first bar that I became sort of a regular at in a real way, because it was right next to a venue downtown called the Trunk Space, which is where all of my bands would play shows. And then of course, I would see other artists even when we weren't playing, but it became sort of like a ritual thing to like watch a set, and then while the band is setting up the next band, you run over and you get like two pitchers of High Life, and that's like a bar where I hung out there often enough that the bartender Wes would she knew who I was, you know. Eventually I DJ'd a couple times in there, and they had a jukebox. And I don't know how you feel about jukeboxes in bars, Ken. I'm kind of a purist. I like a selection of CDs or records. You know, I don't want one of those digital jukeboxes.
Oh, those,
where you can,
no, those things are a crime against the muse, you know. They're a crime against the idea that you need X number of records, and you need records that go with each bar. So, like, when you go into a bar, all right, I'm going to put on whatever the hell, you know, side two of Born to Run.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my favorite thing about Gracie's, is that they've got this great curated jukebox. It's the music they've decided is gonna be played in this establishment. The Bikini Lounge, however, did have one of those digital jukeboxes. And recognizing its crime against humanity-ness, my buddy Jeff and I used to always pick the most obnoxious things possible, and we would often put like $5 worth of Sun Ra on, and then we'd pound our beers, and then we'd go play our show. I remember one time we came back, and as we walked in, the jukebox was unplugged, so I figured that somebody had figured out what we were up to. So
yeah, that's a bad citizenship award there. Now, most bars, at least most old-time bars, have a skip button behind the bar. It's over there where the police alarm button is. So you can hit that button. It's like a doorbell. The best jukeboxes that I've ever encountered are the ones that everybody's going to be pretty happy with the stuff, because it's a mix of crowd pleasers and really kind of hooky rocking stuff and some oldies. You know, like New Orleans bars are really good at this. They'll have regional oldies, and they'll have some kind of like alternative kind of alt underground stuff, and they'll have some country western, they'll have some R&B, they'll have a little hip hop, you know, stuff, but all stuff that you get 2-3 drinks in you and you're gonna love. And that's the art, you know, picking out a selection of music like that. And they even have in New Orleans bars special labels for the jukeboxes for the holidays, because there's always holiday favorites that come in. Like, of course, a Mardi Gras, you got Mardi Gras Mambo and all this kinds of stuff. But then there's other seasonal favorites for Christmas, for springtime, for summer. And they swap those records in, and you just expect, if you go into, you know, the Oyster Bar or something, or Port au Call or whatever, you're going to hear certain songs at certain times of the year, and this goes on for decades and decades.
Man, yeah. Which, yeah, I love that.
It's a beautiful thing. When this is over, where do you think you're going to go first?
Where do I think I'm going to go first? I don't know. I mean, I'm definitely interested in getting out of town, you know? So I've been thinking a lot about, well, I guess listening for Desert Oracle, I've been thinking a lot about your part of the desert, you know?
Yeah.
And I love a visit to Pappy and Harriet's. I've seen some incredible music out there. I've definitely had some great times. But then there's another spot too, sort of in the Superstition Mountains out here. Just outside of the mountain range, a place that I've liked to sometimes go camping in the Superstition Mountains, my friends and I, my brother, you know, we'll load out on like a Friday and stay out there. There's a couple different spots. There's a place called Fish Creek, and then when we're feeling a little bit more rugged, there's a backpacking trip that we'll do out to a place called Rivas Ranch. And I've been thinking about the bar that we visited after that last time we did that hike. That's the bar that's, strangely enough, been stuck in my head. It's called Tortilla Flat, and it's right as you are about to sort of enter the mountain range. You got to go through these long stretch of windy roads, and there's a bunch of one-way bridges where you have to wait for somebody if they're going the opposite direction, and then you go after that. But the last time we went out there, we did this hike, and it was pretty brutal. We went a little bit late in the year, so it was warm enough. But you do this long hike, it's like 9 miles in and 9 miles out. And the last time that we did it, we were really feeling kind of whooped on that Sunday, because it had been really hot, and we had kind of, you know, some of us maybe partied too hard the night before or whatever, I don't know. Anyway, the last time we left, we were driving out, and as we were turning the corner sort of out of the mountain range, I said, we should stop at the bar over there. We should stop at Tortilla Flat. And I'll tell you, Ken, the walls are covered in like $1 bills.
Oh, that's a classic desert bar.
Classic roadhouse thing. And the food is okay, but it beats the pants off your like dehydrated, you know, just add water meals or whatever.
Yeah. So it's like like a bar greasy spoon kind of thing.
That's right. We sat down in there, and I got like a bean burrito, and I had 3 beers, and it was, I mean, I'm gonna put it up there in the top 10 meals I've ever had, just because of the circumstance, you know.
Yeah.
And that bar, I mean, we could have stayed for hours. You know, we put in some time, and then we, you know, got back on the road and got home. But yeah, I believe, like, weirdly enough, that's the bar that I've sort of been thinking about, was the one. I think it's because there's nothing like a trip to the bar when you feel like you earned it, you know? And I guess maybe that's what we're all feeling right now, is that we have earned a night out at the bar.
Right, and plus that has all the elements that have been restricted in recent times. You're together with your friends, you've gone camping, you've camped out, you're doing a pointless road trip.
Yep.
And then you're hiding in a bar with dollar bills with crazy things written on them all over, drinking beer and eating burritos. That's about perfect. That reminds me of some places I've been thinking of up in northern Nevada, like the Basque bars. There's the little saloon in Genoa up against the Kingsbury Grade, and not too far south of Carson City. Another place with dollar bills on the ceiling and everything. Every time I've ever been in that place, people tell me like, oh, you know, Willie Nelson was just in here. Like, really? What was Willie Nelson doing in here? I said, well, he was playing at the casino in South Tahoe, and they always stop here for a drink and some fresh air once they get out of Tahoe. Oh, okay. So maybe we'll see Willie Nelson out there on the road. I still got my bumper sticker from way back in 2000, and it says, don't blame me, I voted for Willie Nelson. All right, Jason. Well, thanks for having a drink with me. I'm going to finish up the show here and go take a walk in the cool evening air. Maybe I'll go rob a bank or something while I'm out.
That sounds great, Ken. I'm going to get another beer.
That's a good idea. All right, and you'll come back in a couple of weeks, and we'll do our regular music segment. Hopefully, when we've been allowed to break the cabin fever a bit.
Yeah, here's the hope, for sure.
All right, here's to it, Jason. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Cheers, Ken. Thanks.
Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgbm.org. With things warming up even in the mountains this year, this next one might have some good advice. From June 4th, 2021, this is The Heat Monster.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has has fallen on the desert. And well, it finally happened. Just like every year, all of a sudden it's hot. A week ago, it was pleasant out. Depending on your latitude, your elevation, of course. But at 3,000 feet or so, it has been a real nice spring for a lot of us. Dry, no wildflowers, but fairly mild weather we've been having overall. And all of a sudden, we've got public safety alerts for our first heat event of the year. That's what they call them. Extreme heat events, maximum heat events, something like that. And it happens pretty regularly this time of year in the high desert, but each year people act surprised. I do. See, when you just can't stand a significant part of the year, the daytime part, well, it tends to make time fly during the more pleasant parts. Because the good months are never long enough and the bad months always drag on until you just can't take it anymore. And the coastal places are so expensive, the only places with mild weather in a lot of the West in the summer. So you tend to see a lot of movies. What's this one? Shrek? Oh, I'm sorry. Shrek on Ice. How long is it? I'm looking for something in the 3-hour range that nobody else wants to see. And yeah, I'm bringing in these earplugs so I can take a nap in one of your fancy recliner seats. Well, last summer, we could not even have the movies. No hiding inside the ice cream parlor. No hanging out under the air conditioning vent in the library or going to the roller rink. People would make up a reason to go to Walmart. Just gonna drive over there and count the TVs they've got in stock. There's always something on at Walmart in the TV aisle. But rarely a movie or a football game. They know how hot it is outside, and there's probably a corporate memo about not encouraging people to stand around watching the widescreens. But maybe they're busy helping other customers, as they like to say. So you walk maybe 5 aisles over and you get a bunch of those white plastic chairs. Set up a little theater. If anybody hassles you, firmly inform them that this is an emergency cooling center. The weekenders and the tourists and the scene makers are still coming out here and they have to act like it's all normal. They still try to go on hikes, the whole ordeal. Everybody's got to get ready for about an hour and a half. And then there's a good 20 minutes of standing around the trailhead parking lot as the day gets ever more hot and oppressive. Did somebody forget their smart water back at the Airbnb? And if little kids are involved, you gotta add another hour. What's he crying about now? Well, he intentionally stuck a tiny part of a toy into the seatbelt latch and there's no way to get it out. And the seatbelt doesn't work now. Maybe we ought to call AAA. Flag down a park ranger. Several people in the hiking party will now need to go use the outhouses and then complain about the outhouses. And oh, for God's sake, I left my rock identification book in the car. Well, now it's 100 degrees and the birds are panting under the dried up bushes. Everybody is just miserably trying to act like they're enjoying themselves. Finally getting up to some sun-blasted hilltop and seeing the air pollution over the Coachella Valley. It's beautiful, really. Maybe we should stop with all the hiking. Making a big ordeal out of taking a walk for part of the day. Everybody putting on their hiking costumes. You're walking a 3-mile loop on a groomed flat trail. You don't need the Mount Everest peak scalers. When it's hot, a sneaker that can breathe is 100% better than some 5-pound hiking boot that looks like an ankle cast. You have to walk in those things. True, you're not well protected for stepping onto rattlesnakes or cholla. But if you manage to get around your house without falling in the toilet, if you've successfully closed the car door without losing a leg, well, you may have the necessary common sense to not step on a coiled rattlesnake in the middle of the trail. And considering your trail has about 600 people per mile, like a Disneyland line, the snakes are probably staying out of the way. When it gets real hot, everything gets out of hand. People's brains start to fry from within. Skin swollen with the dull heat. Everything you touch is hot. You bring in the trash cans, they're hot. The handles on the plastic roller bins are hot. Crime goes up. People are frustrated and uncomfortable. And that summer-long lethargy that can always burst into violence, into weird and unexpected actions. They were talking on the radio this week about a woman out here who got shot by the deputies. Not fatal. And the spokesman from the department said something like, "And ultimately, we saved her life." And I'm thinking, well, that's one way to look at it. It's that time of year when the street fireworks brighten the late nights, when daylight lingers till nine or longer, when the distant sound of coyotes and drag racing mingles with the swamp cooler's squeaky fan. Somebody ought to call the guy at AC service. Maybe it needs a new belt. Or the pump's locked up. It's that hard water out here. I got one of those combination humidifier air purifier units in preparation for this year's 9-month-long wildfire season. And the water's so hard up here that the humidifier mist runs up the PPM meter to basically industrial disaster levels. Parts per million. You get up in the 300s into the 500s over a lot of the West last year while we slow cooked in the wildfire smoke. And that's just hell on your lungs. If you live in a place with bad air, with a lot of diesel smoke and oil rig fumes and industrial solvents from the factories, then you're more likely to get lung cancer, emphysema, asthma, all the stuff you don't want to have. One of the reasons COVID hit so hard in black and brown and poor neighborhoods is because air quality is consistently worse in lower income areas. In working class immigrant neighborhoods and black neighborhoods, that's what people meant decades ago, 100 years ago, when they talked about being from the wrong side of the tracks. A colorful and accurate way to describe the situation. Like in that Johnny Rivers song, "Welcome Back, Baby."
to the poor side of town. Downwind of the railroad tracks, the dockyards, the stockyards, and the slaughterhouses. That's where you find the tenements and the projects. Rich people live above the worst air. I interviewed Mike Davis one time years ago, the guy who wrote those deeply atmospheric and revealing critiques of Southern California exceptionalism, City of Quartz, and Ecology of Fear. And he talked a lot about how stratification of the classes is enforced by altitude, by topography, vertical stratification. In West Hollywood, you're above the heavy smog. If you can see downtown because you're in the hills and you're very fortunate, when the smog's bad, you see the skyscrapers pushing out of the lowest and densest layer of brown air. When I'm talking about the importance of small businesses, small business people, people with a trade, a craft, and making where you live an important part of your daily existence, I get a lot of that from Mike Davis. Now, he's got critics like anybody lucky enough to have a public reputation, but they're usually saying weird things like, oh, he's romanticizing the working class and the bioregional and historical factors that make for an interesting place. And when I hear that, I think, you know, it's all right to romanticize everything that's important to you. That's a good thing. That's a benefit. That's optimism. If you're just zooming it in, maybe that's not your ultimate destiny in life. So I wrote to the manufacturer of the humidifier air purifier combination, and they tried to act like it was normal. That it's normal for your humidifier air purifier to go into red light panic mode because the particulate pollutants have just gone bonkers in your living quarters. So I looked around on the internet and found a customer review describing the same problem. But this person had figured out that the very hard water, like we often get in the desert towns, is what causes the machine to lose it. Filtered water apparently does the trick. Anyway, if I ever get into any serious trouble, I think I'm gonna try that I ultimately save the person's life defense. Trying to do some advanced planning this year, I asked people across the West for suggestions. Suggested Western towns for hiding out in August. A place with a creek or a river, water. Some restaurants and bars beyond Applebee's, you know? Some bookstores for browsing away half the afternoon. And then leaving with so many books that they've got to double bag them. People walking through the neighborhoods at night, walking their dogs, riding their bicycles, riding their horses, pointing out the owls in the trees, the bats flapping around in the twilight sky. Beer gardens and late night movies. How about a diner open at 2 a.m. for some huevos rancheros and a cup of coffee? Leave your windows open at night, let that cool 2 a.m. breeze fill the cabin. Well, I got 100 or so suggestions, although many people entirely miss the point about the need for the place to be comfortable in August. Santa Fe, Red River, Truth or Consequences, Silver City, Albuquerque, Las Vegas, the New Mexico Las Vegas, the real one. Some people recommended Northern Nevada, Reno and Carson City in particular, but they left out Genoa and Minden, Gardnerville and South Lake Tahoe, and the Ruby Mountains. Washington, Yakima, Winthrop, Walla Walla, Arizona, Flagstaff, Prescott, Cottonwood, Summer Haven, Bisbee, Jerome, Livingston, Bozeman, and Missoula, Montana, Boise, Moscow, and Haley, Idaho, Moab, Utah, Alpine, and Marfa, and San Antonio in Texas, where it's too hot in August. Bend and Joseph and Baker City in Oregon. Bishop and Kernville and Nevada City in California. Lander, Cody, Jackson Hole, Thermopolis, and that's Wyoming. Cortez and Westcliff, Durango and Paonia, Salida, Buena Vista, Glenwood Springs, Grand Junction. The Dakotas even showed up, Rapid City, Fargo. And some lunatic said Whitesburg, Kentucky, that's not even Western Kentucky. Now, some people might be saying, hey, you can't say Lake Tahoe, that's not the desert. Get back in the desert, which is the only place you're allowed. I mean, last summer, a couple listeners got bent out of shape because I mentioned Iceland. But the people roasting in the solar inferno of August desert living, they understand. We don't even necessarily need to know where Iceland is or if it's even real. It might be some fictional world from Shrek on Ice for all we care. Just like to think about a land of ice as we melt in a fast evaporating pool of our own blood, sweat, and tears. Either way, Lake Tahoe is a source of the Truckee River, which comes to an end at Pyramid Lake. And then there's the Carson River, which eventually vanishes into the dust and sand of the Carson Sink, the great rivers of northern Nevada. Speaking of Lake Tahoe, we got the regular newsletter from our friends at Alta Magazine, the Journal of Alta, California. A real good print magazine that you should subscribe to if you like magazines. It even comes out 4 times a year, like it's supposed to. So this newsletter article by Alta's digital editor, Beth Spotswood, is very appropriate for our interests around here. A headline that might be Tessie at your toes. Those of us headed to Lake Tahoe this summer might want a refresher course in one of California's lesser-known legends. Tales of Lake Tahoe's mythical, or at least unidentified, underwater inhabitants span centuries. Indigenous folklore from the region includes descriptions of water babies, dangerous and powerful creatures whose cry can serve as an omen of death. Following the gold rush, when white settlers pushed their way west and grabbed land around Lake Tahoe, rumors and murmurs of curious, scaly monster sightings began to pop up in local lore and in the news. In 1897, San Franciscan I.C. Coggin wrote a riveting first-person account of an encounter with what he reported to be a 600-foot-long monster serpent in the woods near Lake Tahoe, some 30 years before his report. In the 1950s, two off-duty police officers reported a large creature swimming under their boat at a whopping 60 miles per hour. Sightings continued in the 1970s, the 80s, and the 90s, including by a water skier who swore he saw a 10-foot-long creature swimming beneath him, and the owner of a local television station who spotted something with brown humps plodding through Zephyr Cove. Resident Bob McCormick took advantage of the popular legend and nicknamed the creature Tahoe Tessie, a nod to the famed Loch Ness Monster, or Nessie, of Scotland. McCormick's 1985 children's book, The Story of Tahoe Tessie, the original Lake Tahoe Monster, continues to be sold at local gift shops. People continue to dress in cartoonish Tessie costumes for parades and events, and tourists buy Tessie toys. At a maximum depth of 1,644 feet, Lake Tahoe is the second deepest lake in the country. Crater Lake, full of its own mysteries, is the deepest. So it is possible that there's much we don't know about what lurks beneath. But in the mid-1980s, a researcher at UC Davis proposed one possible explanation for the legend of Tessie. She's a really big sturgeon. This prehistoric bottom feeder can grow as large as 12 feet long, weigh up to 1,500 pounds, and can have a back covered in scales. But there are some who still insist that Tahoe Tessie isn't a sturgeon or a fun local legend, but rather a dangerous, unidentified underwater creature. Oceanographer Jacques Cousteau undertook a number of Lake Tahoe mini-submarine dives in the middle 1970s. And when asked what he found, Cousteau reportedly said, "The world isn't ready for what is down there." But he said it in a French accent. Happy swimming. Beth Spotswood signs off. And you can read the whole thing at altaonline.com. I used to swim in that big blue lake whenever I could in the dry, hot summers around Reno. I taught my dog how to swim in Tahoe, my dog at the time. He was a little scared of the water, considering that I rescued him from drowning in my neighbor's half-full, freezing cold above-ground pool near Christmas time. So the dog figured he'd just avoid water from then on, which was smart. But swimming is fun when you can go back to the sandy shore whenever you like. So I'd swim out to where it was nice and deep and then call him to join me. And eventually he did it, and he liked it. But once he was ready to get back on the land, he always raced out of water like a bat out of hell, like a monster was going to get him. I've never seen Tahoe Tessie. I've never seen the Loch Ness version. I've never seen a sea monster. But this summer might be the time to go on a snipe hunt. When I'm on the road checking out some of these many recommended towns I've maybe only ever passed through or missed completely, looking for somewhere to settle for August, a place with a couple of small theaters within an hour or two drive, do some live shows, maybe someplace like Durango, where it rarely gets higher than the low 80s in August. Looks like Lucy took the football again, and all the alien faithful have once again been denied their alien disclosure that was never going to happen because there's nothing to disclose. It's typical for the national press to ignore what's happening over people's heads every night and make it all about the government,
the military, aerospace contractors, Top Gun, Harry Reid.
Real UFOs are still manifesting. True unidentified wonders in the night sky, over the American West, over the Hudson River, floating silently over the Estrellas or Gila Bend, the Gulf of California. Really, anywhere you can get a good look at the night sky. Last time, we talked about the many May the 15th witnesses, especially in the Pacific Northwest and clear out to Yellowstone. Most of them made a point of saying they know about Starlink. They've seen Starlink satellites in that west-east string of pearls in the night sky. Too many alleged UFO sightings in our current time are nothing but those Starlink internet satellites launched by SpaceX. So if you want to see a UFO, you should first get familiar with the other sites in the sky. Rockets and airplanes, military flares over 29 palms, the International Space Station, like a great white egg from horizon to horizon. I was at a party up in Flamingo Heights a couple weekends ago, and people were all excited because, well, mostly because we were finally having parties again, delighting in the company of our fellow humans, standing around in the desert dirt, drinking beer and watching the grill. But then the people were excited to see in the northwestern sky this little train of satellites reflecting sunlight. It's a wild thing to witness, even when you know what they are. It's like counting space sheep. It's hypnotic and delightful. From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Soundscapes tonight by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Come visit us at DesertOracle.com. We got books, we got magazines. Thank you, friends of the night, for joining us on this warm evening in the Mojave or wherever you are. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to all the volunteers, supporters, and underwriters that support KGVM. Again, we'd always love to hear from you. You can leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-404-6246. That's my Google Voice number. So I will get back to you, but you do leave a message there. And this program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org. At 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the KGVM.org website. Watch those skies, stay well, keep doing good things, and sweet dreams. I'll see you next week.